This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine waking up tomorrow, grabbing your phone, and realizing your favorite companion app is just gone.
Just completely wiped.
Right. Like maybe a chatbot you've been using to vent or, you know, organize your thoughts or just pass the time. Not glitching, but permanently deleted by the government.
And you definitely wouldn't be alone in that. You'd be one of an estimated 500 million users affected in just a single sweeping move.
Which is wild. And that is exactly what happened on July 15th, 2026. Literally overnight, roughly 14,000 emotional and companion AI apps were wiped out in Shanghai alone.
Yeah, it sounds like, I don't know, the opening scene of a dystopian thriller.
It really does. But it's actually just the opening move in a massive, mostly invisible tech war.
Mm-hmm.
So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are exploring a pretty paradigm-shifting report dated July 20, 2026, which maps out how the global technology landscape is, well, actively tearing itself into two entirely distinct universes.
Yeah, and to guide us through this whole landscape, we are relying on a comprehensive briefing and commentary provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker. He has meticulously tracked these recent just radical shifts across AI, robotics, semiconductors, and telecommunications.
And the central thesis that emerges from all this data is, frankly, striking. The Chinese AI industry is basically done experimenting.
They're over the research phase.
Exactly. They are pivoting away from that basic, you know, what can we build phase and shifting aggressively into how do we monetize this and how do we deploy it at absolute maximum scale.
And we are going to impartially examine this data with you today to really understand the geopolitical ripple effects. Because, I mean, when a tech ecosystem of this size fundamentally alters its strategy,
it forces everyone else to react.
Exactly. It forces the rest of the world to react. So we will specifically look at markets caught in the crossfire, like South Korea, to see what this whole decoupling means for the future of global innovation.
Okay, so let's unpack this. To see where these new lines are being drawn, we have to start at the macro level. So the World AI Conference, or WAIC 2026, just wrapped up in Shanghai.
Yeah, a huge event.
Right. And President Xi Jinping gave the first ever keynote there. The message was unmistakable, opposing a single nation monopoly on AI.
And that keynote, it was essentially the formal declaration of a split in global AI governance.
A literal dividing line.
Yeah. You now have two distinct competing camps. On one side, there's PaxSilica, which is a U.S.-led alliance of 35 countries, mostly from the G7 and the EU.
Okay.
And on the other side, launched at this very conference, is WAIKO, headquartered in Shanghai, starting out with 29 member countries.
And then you have nations like South Korea just sitting on the sidelines trying to figure out which way the wind is blowing.
Right, they haven't signed with either.
But the split isn't just about political posturing, is it? The actual technology is keeping pace. At that same conference, a Chinese startup called Moonshot AI revealed a model named Kimi K3. And the specs on this are intense.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a 2.8 trillion parameter open weight model with a 1 million token context window.
Let's break those numbers down for a second because they are really significant indicators of capability.
Yeah, please do.
So the parameters, all 2.8 trillion of them, are essentially the neural connections of the AI. That number dictates how complex and nuanced the model's reasoning can be.
Wow.
And by calling it an open weight model, they mean the core architecture is made available for other developers.
Yeah.
They can build upon it and customize it rather than it being locked away in some corporate black box.
Right. So it's this massive, highly capable system that others can actually tinker with. And that 1 million token context window.
That's huge.
It means in a single prompt, this AI can process, remember, and analyze the text equivalent of several thick novels. Like it doesn't forget page one by the time it reads page 500.
Yeah, and the data shows this model now ranks third globally. It's closing the performance gap with top-tier U.S. systems to within about 10%.
It is a massive technical leap. But here is the geopolitical catch, right? While Moonshot AI built this as an open-weight model, China's Ministry of Commerce is simultaneously considering a three-tier export restriction. They want to control foreign access to these advanced AI models. But wait, let me think about this. If they restrict access to their own open models, doesn't that inherently limit their own global influence?
You would think so, yeah.
I mean, the whole point of an open ecosystem is to get developers worldwide building on your platform, right? If you lock them out, you're just stifling your own reach just to punish foreign developers.
Well, you have to view this move as a direct mirror to U.S. policy, We are watching tech decoupling play out in very distinct phases here.
Okay, how so?
So phase one was the hardware wall. The U.S. banned the export of advanced AI chips, you know, the physical engines of AI, to China.
Right, the chip bans.
Exactly. Phase two is what we're seeing right now, the software wall. China is threatening to limit the export of the models themselves. And then phase three is the institutional wall we just talked about, WAICO versus PacSilica.
Ah, so entirely tit for tat. You choke off the hardware, we choke off the software.
Exactly. They are weaponizing their intellectual property as a strategic asset. And the commentary from lawyer Kunjin Kim points out exactly why this is a nightmare scenario for unaligned nations.
Like South Korea.
Precisely. Take South Korea. Their tech industry relies heavily on U.S. semiconductor supply chains and design tools. But their massive consumer markets and telecommunications equipment interests are deeply tied to China.
Oh, wow. So they're totally stuck in the middle.
Yeah. If they are forced to choose between PacSilica and WAICO, they aren't just signing a diplomatic treaty. They're making a choice that could force a fundamental restructuring of their entire domestic economy.
That is a terrifying tightrope to walk. But, you know, the geopolitical maneuvering is only half the story.
Right.
While they are building these invisible walls internationally, they are completely overhauling how AI works domestically. Which brings us back to that 14,000 app purge we started with.
Yeah, that was July 15th.
Right. A world-first dual AI regulation went into effect in China.
It is a really fascinating approach to governance because it is so incredibly binary. They drew a hard, fast line between the machine as a companion and the machine as a tool.
And they did not hold back on the companion side. Emotional AI services were completely banned. Any app designed to act as a friend, a romantic partner, or a therapist, just gone.
Overnight.
But simultaneously, they are aggressively pushing functional AI. Things like medical diagnostics, transport logistics, and public safety are highly encouraged. The catch is that these functional tools now require a strict three-tier human approval system, depending on how high the stakes are.
Well, it is ultimately about state control and resource allocation.
Mm.
If you think about the immense computing power required to run AI at scale, having millions of citizens chatting with virtual partners is a massive drain on server farms.
That's a good point. It uses a lot of energy and compute.
Exactly. So by severing the emotional attachment to AI, the state prevents unpredictable social dynamics, you know, parasocial relationships, where citizens might be heavily influenced by a machine.
Right.
Instead, they redirect all of that precious, expensive computing power toward industrial utility.
It's essentially saying, you know, we don't want you making friends with the calculator. We just want you to do the math.
That is a great way to put it.
I can see the brutal efficiency in that. And reading through the commentary from lawyer Kunjin Kim, there's a real emphasis on the clarity of this dual regulation. It's totally black and white.
Yeah, it leaves no room for confusion.
Contrast that with what we are seeing in South Korea, where the AI laws are still a bit murky, relying on broad ethical principles rather than hard executable rules.
And that regulatory clarity gives their domestic companies a distinct advantage, which is certainty. They know exactly what they are allowed to build.
Right. No guessing games.
And you can see that functional push transforming their telecommunications sector right now. Chinese telcos are radically shifting their business models. They're no longer just selling mobile data.
Yeah, this part blew my mind. They are selling AI token subscriptions directly to consumers. Like, China Telecom is offering 10 million AI tokens for about $1.40 a month.
That is incredibly cheap.
And they are trying to get 200 million consumer accounts signed up by the end of the year. They are treating access to an AI brain the exact same way you treat your 5G data plan.
Which is a brilliant strategy for mass adoption. They are completely commoditizing cognitive bandwidth.
No.
By integrating AI inference directly into the baseline utility of everyday life, they are making it as essential as internet access.
So instead of paying $20 a month for a premium AI subscription from a specific tech company, the AI is just baked quietly into my phone bill.
Yes. And if China Telecom hits that 200 million user base, they effectively set the global standard for how AI is built and consumed.
Everyone else will have to adapt.
Exactly. Global telcos are going to be watching this very closely. If they want to survive the next decade, they will likely be forced to study and replicate this model, transitioning from simply providing the pipes for the internet to providing the actual intelligence flowing through them.
Okay, so they've commoditized the software. They've made the brain of the AI a cheap, everyday utility. But a brain needs a body to interact with the world.
Right.
And that seems to be the next phase of this pivot. This software is taking physical form, and it is moving into consumer hardware and robotics at a startling pace. Here's where it gets really interesting.
We are watching robotics cross a major threshold right now, transitioning from specialized, business-to-business industrial equipment straight into everyday consumer retail.
Yeah, the report mentions Magic Lab partnering with AliExpress. They are literally going to sell humanoid and quadruped robots directly to consumers across 150 countries.
It's crazy to think about.
Wait, so you're telling me I can soon log on to an e-commerce site and just add a security robot to my cart right next to a cheap phone charger?
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
It is a massive shift in accessibility, and these aren't rudimentary toys either. Take Agibot, for example. At WAIC, they showcased the A3 Ultra robot.
Great, I read about that one.
It runs on NVIDIA's advanced Thor chip, has an 8-hour battery life, and it actually won the Pearl of the Exhibition Award. Agibot already commands a 39% global market share in their sector.
Wow, 39%.
Yeah, and they aren't just exporting hardware. They're aggressively setting up local research and development hubs abroad to tailor these machines to foreign markets.
But it's not just the consumer robots, right? It's the sheer computational muscle required to train and run all of this. This is where Huawei comes in.
Oh, yes, Huawei.
They unveiled something called the Atlas 950 SuperPod. And the scale here is hard to wrap your head around. It's 1,024 cabinets of computing power.
Massive.
And Huawei claims it has 2.87 times the inference performance of NVIDIA's H20 chip, but at a quarter of the price.
And they are scheduled to begin distributing this architecture in Korea by Q4 of this year.
Okay, I have to be slightly skeptical here. Claims on paper are one thing. Can Huawei actually compete with NVIDIA's performance in real-world massive-scale clusters? Or is this massive price cut just a desperate attempt to stay relevant while operating under heavy U.S. sanctions?
It's a completely fair skepticism, but you have to look beyond absolute peak performance.
Okay.
NVIDIA might still hold a slight edge at the bleeding edge of processing. However, Huawei is offering an integrated massive scale system at a severe discount. And crucially, it is completely insulated from U.S. export controls.
Ah.
A strategy is what we call ecosystem embedding.
Meaning once you buy into their system, you're stuck. Like it's too hard to switch.
Precisely. If a company builds its data centers, its software stack, and its training protocols on Huawei's specific architecture, switching back to NVIDIA later becomes financially and technically prohibitive.
So it's vendor lock-in on a geopolitical scale.
Yes. Lawyer Kyungjin Kim noted that this Q4 entry of the Atlas 950 into Korea is a critical litmus test. You have South Korean companies desperate for affordable computing power to stay competitive, colliding directly with their government's diplomatic balancing act with the U.S.
And this push for complete vertical integration is everywhere. The Chinese automaker NIO has a semiconductor arm called Shenji, and they are now selling their custom AI chips externally.
Which is huge. Not even Tesla does that.
Right. Add to that their network infrastructure. China's 5G Advanced is already live in 330 cities, explicitly laying the groundwork for an AI-native 6G network by 2030.
They're building the whole stack.
Exactly. They are building the brains, they are building the robotic bodies, they are manufacturing the chips to run them, and they are laying the high-speed network to connect it all together.
And when a domestic ecosystem of that magnitude scales up that aggressively and becomes fully vertically integrated, it doesn't just stay within its borders.
No, of course not.
It inevitably spills over. Which brings us to the financial shockwaves currently hitting neighboring markets.
So what does this all mean for you? If you are watching the capital markets, the ripple effects are already here. Look at CXM2.
Right, the DRAM manufacturer.
Exactly. They are China's top manufacturer of DRAM. For context for you listening, DRAM is dynamic random access memory. It's essentially the critical short-term memory chip used in almost every electronic device you own.
Every phone, every laptop.
CXMT just confirmed an IPO on the Star Market for July 27th, and it is a monster, valued at $85 billion. The shares were 243 times oversubscribed. There are even reports that Apple is quietly testing their DRAM right now.
That's a huge signal to the market.
Is CXMT doing to memory chips what BYD did to electric vehicles?
Yeah.
Just quietly building massive scale domestically, and now they are poised to crush global prices.
The parallels are definitely there.
Yeah.
The successful rise of CXMT means the global supply chain is about to see an absolute flood of legacy DRAM.
Because they can produce so much of it.
Yeah. And the mechanism here is simple economics. When you have a massive influx of supply, global prices plummet. And that creates immediate severe downward price pressure for the current market leaders. specifically Samsung and SK Hynix in South Korea.
Which explains the cracks we are already seeing. SK Hynix's Q2 earnings on July 22nd are expected to miss consensus estimates.
Right.
They're projecting around 60.4 trillion Korean won, which is noticeably short of the expected 65 trillion. The report notes this is partly due to delays in their next generation HBM4 chips.
And HBM4 is crucial. High bandwidth memory is the specialized stacked memory specifically required to feed massive amounts of data into advanced AI processors.
So it's essential for all this AI stuff we've been talking about.
Exactly. Any delay there is incredibly costly.
Yeah.
Combine that delay with the fact that SK Hynix is locked into fixed price contracts for their older chips, meaning they can't capitalize on recent market price bumps, and you have a recipe for missed earnings.
And because South Korea's economy is so heavily weighted by these tech giants, a miss for SK Hynix isn't just a bad day for a company.
No, it's much bigger than that.
As lawyer Kyungjin Kim points out, it becomes a structural stress test for the entire Korean capital market. We saw the Korean stock market, the KOSPI, suffer a sharp 6.37% drop on July 16th.
That drop was a confluence of several pressures.
Yep.
It followed a Bank of Korea rate hike to 2.75%, which naturally cools investment.
Sure.
But then the market closed for a three-day gap for Constitution Day and the weekend. When markets are closed during a period of high uncertainty, anxiety just compounds.
People panic when they can't trade.
Right. Investors spent 3 days watching these global tech shifts and DRM oversupply fears, just waiting for the July 21st reopening to see if the floor was going to fall out.
And to add to that anxiety, there is a newfound volatility coming from U.S.-traded American depository receipts, or ADRs.
Yes. ADRs are essentially certificates that allow U.S. investors to easily trade shares of foreign companies on American stock exchanges. SK Hynix has seen massive success on the NASDAQ with their ADRs.
And now there are intense rumors swirling that Samsung is planning their own U.S. ADR listing.
Yeah, that rumor's everywhere.
The company has officially denied it, but the rumors persist. If Samsung were to list in the U.S., it would certainly give global investors easier access to their stock, which sounds great for Samsung. But wouldn't that actively pull investment capital and liquidity right out of the domestic Korean exchange?
That is exactly the fear. It's a zero-sum game for liquidity. If the trading volume moves to New York, the domestic exchange in Seoul hollows out.
Wow.
The broader takeaway here is the intense interconnectedness of all these moves. A regulatory shift in Shanghai regarding how AI models are exported, or a new chip architecture from Huawei, instantly reverberates.
It's all connected.
It prices directly into the KOSPI index, into semiconductor valuations, and ultimately into the retirement accounts of people listening to this deep dive right now. We talk about the decoupling of technology, but it is causing a violent recoupling of financial risk across borders.
It is a massive amount to process. I mean, we started by looking at a globe being redrawn, not with physical borders, but with institutional alliances like WAICO and Paxilica splitting the AI landscape in two.
Yeah, a totally new map.
We saw China make the decisive, almost surgical move to eliminate emotional AI, ruthlessly redirecting that computing power toward functional tools, commercial robotics, and commoditized AI tokens.
And we tracked how that strategy is physically manifesting, from consumer-ready humanoid robots on e-commerce sites to massive computing clusters aiming to lock users into a new ecosystem.
Ultimately sending financial shockwaves straight into the global memory chip market and the Korean stock exchange, it really changes how you look at the devices we rely on every single day.
It does. And I want to leave you with one final thought to ponder as you navigate this changing landscape.
Okay, what is it?
If we are truly entering an era where access to the best AI models, the critical data, and the hardware to run it is dictated entirely by which geopolitical alliance your country signs with, what happens to the global open source community? This entire technological revolution was built on developers freely sharing code across borders. Will the next great leap in human innovation be bottlenecked by a digital passport?
Oh, wow. That might be the defining question of the next decade. The borders that matter most are no longer visible on a map. They are shifting daily, written in silicon and code, and woven into the very infrastructure of our future. We want to thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the information around you. Pay attention to where these invisible lines are being drawn, and we will catch you next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow Daily AI News from Seoul on Apple Podcasts.